Blog Talk Radio.
Gee, I don't mean to bother you, Doc, but it's a mystery to me why it took so long to get this show on the air. It certainly ties up all the loose ends with Christian Talk. Gee, my wife just loves this show, Doc.
Well, my dear friend Peter Falk, who played Columbo, we sure need Columbo now, because today we want to get some fresh attention on a cold case. Krista Helm, a beautiful actress who we've seen on some of the great retro shows as a guest star, Wonder Woman, Starsky and Hutch. We're honored to have Jamie Duvall on the show here, who's researched this case and done more than just about anybody, I think, in trying to shine the light on this thing that has gone cold, of this starlet that was stabbed in 1977. And she was moving in some of the circles that some of my listeners and some of my celebrity friends were moving. And we're going to get into that. And hopefully, like several other cases that were cold and recently solved, we can get this investigated and solved. And I feel very optimistic and very grateful to have Jamie Duvall on the show. So don't go anywhere and share this link with people that you know that were in the Hollywood circles, the theater circles, the film circles, the party circles of Hollywood in particularly the 70s in that disco era. Let's share this link and get a lot of people listening and get some attention back on this, and let's solve this case. I'll be right back with Jamie in about a half a minute, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live. Jamie Duvall is the host of a very popular podcast, and it's definitely one of the best I've heard. Movie Geeks United talks about movies and all the things that many of us love with different filmmakers. And Jamie got interested in this case, and in addition to being an actor, writer, singer, he has kind of breathed new life into an investigation on this and done several shows on it. Welcome to the show, Jamie, and thanks for coming on to talk about, you know, an unpleasant subject, but one we must try to put our eyes back on to solve. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be with you.
Jamie, I know you do so much, and for people that haven't heard your show yet, tell them how they can hear Movie Geeks United and tune into some of the things you're doing now.
Well, Movie Geeks United, it's a podcast I started back in 2007, so we're going on 12 years now, and we've got a library of about 1,000 interviews that we've done with filmmakers like James Cameron and Francis Coppola, Jennifer Lawrence, a ton of people, and you can find all that content at moviegeeksunited.net.
Moviegeeksunited.net. Wow, that's great. You have kind of a film school right there, all those interviews.
That's what I've tried to do, yeah, hopefully.
Well, we really appreciate it, those of us making films. Jamie, how did you get drawn into the Krista Helm case?
Well, in 2014, part of our podcast, we do offshoot series. Like, we have a Kubrick series, a cinematography series, and when true crime turned out to be all the rage this past decade, I thought, well, maybe we should do a series on Hollywood unsolved crimes, or kind of the crimes that have become Hollywood myth. And I wasn't crazy about the idea of necessarily doing the most popular or infamous crimes. I wanted to shed light on stories that people aren't familiar with. So I stumbled upon Krista Helm's story in building this new series. And the person that really got the ball rolling on this and hurling it into the public consciousness is a guy named Stephen Thompson. And he has his own website.
Is he the one that writes
the
blog on the case, Jamie?
Yeah, his blog is Krista Helm at blogspot.com. KristaHelm.blogspot.com, I believe. I'll verify that. But if you Google Krista Helm, it's one of the first searches that pops up because
he's really taken a lead. And I have to shout out to Stephen as well because in preparing for this interview, I've read whatever I could. And certainly, Stephen, you have done so much to, you know, really go into the details on this thing, and we can't thank you enough. So that is KristaHelm.blogspot. We're checking it here. Yeah, that's right, KristaHelm.blogspot.com. Thank you again, Stephen. So you discovered that Stephen was looking into this, and then you decided to do some shows on it.
I decided to do a show on it. I got Stephen on the show. I got a co-author of his that wrote an article on Krista. I got Krista's daughter, Krista's best friend, and some other people that were acquainted with Krista. I got the original investigator in 77 and the current or the cold case investigator that picked up the case in the 2000s. So it was a packed show filled with people related to the case.
Wow, that's fantastic. We've seen her on some retro TV shows. My wife and I saw her recently on, I think it was MeTV on Wonder Woman. And she came here from a small town, Wisconsin, I believe, right?
In Milwaukee, yes. Born in 1949.
And there were some rumors initially when this case broke of a lot of different wild theories. But tell us what happened. Tell us what happened. And I know there's a lot of theories out there about the missing diary and, Sal Mineo, all these different theories. But tell us as best you can what actually happened that fateful night.
Well, she was leaving a party in L.A. It was February 11th, 1977. And it was nighttime, probably early morning, after midnight. She drove up the Hollywood Hills to the house of an acquaintance. He was a music agent, though I think really he was a drug dealer. His name was Sanford Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Her car was parked in front of his house in a way that suggests that she was driving at a fast pace, that she knew she was being followed because her tire was blown out on the curb.
So she was in a hurry to maybe get out of that car and park and get out of that car.
Yes. She ran up to the front of the house. Whether or not she got into that house, we don't know. Sanford Smith said that he was sleeping that night, and he didn't hear her, and he didn't come to the door. I kind of doubt that. But either way, on her way back from the front door, she was attacked. Detectives believe there were two people involved because she was stabbed repeatedly and hit over the head with a blunt object. So they think she was ambushed.
And this is in West Hollywood, for those of you living out here. 1977, February, West Hollywood. I think it was Lloyd Place, like south of Sunset.
Yes, and I just visited that because I do not live in L.A., I live in Florida, but I took a trip to L.A. the past few months, and I visited that site, and the house that she was murdered in front of is now demolished. But everything else around it is pretty much the same. You could recognize the neighboring houses by the crime scene photos. So, but she was found tucked underneath a car, and she died right there.
And we probably don't know if that was her trying to maybe out of it crawl to a safe spot or if someone tried to just put her under there to conceal it. We have no idea, I guess. But the house being gone, is that related to the case or it just torn down for other reasons?
I have no idea why it was torn down, but the Sanford Smith, the guy that lived in that house at that time, he's long gone from that house. It's changed hands several times over the years. So I don't think it's gone in any way that relates to this murder.
Okay. You know, there's a lot of things out there, and I wanted you, as someone that's really looked into it, to give us your take on it. But I guess the prevailing buzz, which of course makes great copy, is that there was this journal, this diary of sexcapades with various people, and you know, that perhaps, you know, and, you know, these people were threatened by her taping and or writing about that. The existence of these tapes and diary, I guess, you know, Marilyn Monroe, they said a similar thing about a red diary, but do we know about that from the testimony of her friends, or how, it, you know, do you think there definitely is this diary in these tapes, and how do we know that they exist?
There were definitely tapes, and there was definitely a diary. This is a practice that she had since she was a teenager. She and her childhood friends would kind of make notes on the boys that they dated or
okay.
spent time with. It was kind of a rating system, and like a diary entry rating system. And she continued that practice as an adult. She was known to cavort with a bunch of famous people, and she rated them in her diary, and she actually made audio recordings of some of them as well. And this information comes from her friends, her roommate at the time of her murder, who saw the diary and heard some of the tapes, the detectives who confiscated some of the tapes, they were definitely in existence. And the people in her diary included Jack Nicholson, Roman Polanski, Warren Beatty, Shah of Iran. I mean, it ran the gamut. She was a busy gal.
Yeah. And so we not only have Hollywood wealth and power, but the Shah of Iran, a very powerful man in the world, is a world leader.
Yes.
Now, I heard a cryptic postcard was sent to her friend Darlene, I think was her name, that said something along the lines of, "I'm in way over my head. I'm into something I can't get out of." That sounds quite ominous. Do you know what's your take on that postcard? Do you think that's true? And what is your best thinking on what this means? Is it these liaisons with these powerful men? Is it something else?
I think the thing with the diary makes this story particularly salacious and juicy for the public, but I don't think it actually has anything to do with her death. The mystery kind of started, the allure of that started because her diary turned up missing. My understanding is she always kept her diary in her purse, and her purse was not found. So whoever swiped her purse swiped the diary. But in terms of the cryptic note to her childhood friend Darlene, I have every reason to believe it's accurate, that she felt towards the end of her life that she was in a bad spot, and she was associating with kind of it's interesting, her social circle was filled with kind of celebrities and creatives of the time, and really the kind of the dregs of society as well.
Yeah.
And I think she felt some kind of threat from that element that she was hanging around with at that time.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned these two worlds, because I saw that too. Some articles talk about her being a quote-unquote B-list actress, and, you know, and I see where they get that. She was in, I think her first movie was something about Satan and very low budget, you know, Legacy of Satan, I think it was called. And but, you know, on the episodics she did, I actually thought she was good. I mean, she was great as that kind of bitchy character in the beauty pageant and Wonder Woman and everything. But yet she's in this kind of B-list or dregs of society set, but yet also it talks about her being associating with some of the, you know, most rich and famous people at the time that you mentioned, Polanski and Jack Nicholson and Namath and Warren Beatty, the Shah of Iran, all those. So you think that some of the shady people that she was involved with could be an issue here? Yeah, I have to admit my thinking really kind of echoes yours. Like when I hear the theory that, some big star, slept with her and was upset about the diary, I just, it's really hard for me to, I mean, it's possible, of course, but it's really hard for me to buy that some famous actor just did this. It seems like the answer is in a seedier place. And now,
well, there's
the cops,
a, there's a
the
rumor.
Cops haven't really, have they kept, has this grown cold, or have the cops not followed up on things, Jamie?
I think it's colder than cold for the cops. I've been disenchanted with the cold case squad, and I'm empathetic at the same time. I know that, especially in a place like L.A., their caseload has to be enormous, and this is a 42-year-old case. They investigated it when it first happened for a while, and then they dropped the ball, and then Krista's daughter urged them to pick it up again, I think, around the around the mid-2000s, maybe. And so they did, and they did an episode of 48 Hours, and then they kind of dropped it again. I've provided them with a couple of leads over the years and heard nothing back. And the contacts that I've put them in touch with, they haven't bothered to call them. And I understand if it's a few months or a year, but it's been 5 years and they haven't made any attempt.
Oh,
meanwhile,
that's so heartbreaking.
The two, but they are always available to be on camera and to talk about, which bothers me. Meanwhile, the two detectives that were in charge of the case have now retired. And
yeah,
the last
I
heard,
time has gone by over 40 years. So they need to assign somebody fresh to this. But it sounds like you have
more faith.
They haven't
done that yet.
Yeah. Well, we know a lot of people out there that may know something. I've also heard these stories about a missing woman that may have been involved in, and you know, if you, by the way, parents, if you have kids too close to the show, the computer or radio right now, you may want to remove them because we'll probably get into some R-rated territory here. But there's this story of her involved with a threesome with a man and a woman, and that woman may know something, and she's vanished like a ghost. What's the deal on that?
Her name is Patty Collins. So Krista's story, first of all, to get everybody up to speed, because we can get lost in the weeds here. There's so many names involved. But essentially, she moved away from Wisconsin. She moved to New York to try to make a star of herself. She connected with a lot of people. She was made an investor in a play called Godspell, which turned out to be a big hit. So she got a little money from that. She moved to L.A. Because she had done a little movie.
Oh, if I could just pause for a second, Jamie, how was she able to invest in Godspell? Was this through some of the benefactors that she was getting the money?
She was given an opportunity to invest through the show's producer, Stuart Duncan.
Okay.
Stuart Duncan was her sugar daddy, essentially. He was having an affair with her, and he put her up in a house in the Hamptons and the whole deal. And basically, they broke off, I think, around the time she moved to L.A. But Stuart Duncan is still living, and he won't discuss Krista at all. But anyway, she moved to L.A., hoping that this movie that she did would find a theatrical release, which it never did. But in the meantime, she got bit parts in Wonder Woman and Starsky and Hutch, and she made a lot of connections, including a connection with a famous radio disc jockey named Frankie Crocker.
Yeah.
And she convinced him to let her record a disco album in the studio.
And he was that kind of urban black, soulful kind of cool New York DJ.
He basically, he invented the term urban contemporary, I think, was his claim to fame. And he was the biggest on both coasts, really, of the music radio host.
And also, just because we have a lot of kind of people in Hollywood in that era, you mentioned a film she was hoping for distribution, and it didn't really go too far. What film was that?
It's called Let's Go for Broke. It was produced by Stuart Duncan, her sugar daddy. And it took her to Haiti and Florida. It was kind of a female James Bond spoofish movie. Probably not a great cinema. But it premiered and played for a few weeks in Cincinnati, of all places.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
she was waiting for it to get national distribution, and it never did. It's never seen the light of day since, really.
Mm. That'd be nice to, so hopefully someone that'll eventually become available. That would be, you know, be interesting to see for people that are interested in Chris to at least see it.
If I would predict it will be sooner rather than later. I think what's holding it up is that Stuart Duncan owns the rights to it, I suppose. And if he passes, then there are people that have access to the film that will release it. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, great. So she comes out to Los Angeles. The Stuart Duncan Let's Go for Broke just went to Cincinnati and closes after a few showings. And now she's out here. She's starting to book a few parts. And, I mean, shortly thereafter, I mean, her death was, I think, the next year after the Wonder Woman and you know, starting to get some jobs.
It wasn't too long after. And it all seems to be coinciding with this recording session when she was doing this album. There's a lot of contacts involved in this album, including this mystery woman that you're talking about that's missing now. Her name is Patty Collins, and she and Krista started an affair. But Krista was also having an affair with her keyboardist on the sessions, and his name was Blair Aronson, another person that refuses to talk about the case. There was a big kind of everybody sleeping with everyone else. There's a lot of jealousy. One person I spoke to said that Patty Collins was extremely jealous. And another person told me Patty Collins could have cared less who Krista slept with. There's a lot of back and forth about who Patty Collins is. But regardless, after Krista was murdered, the cops could not find Patty Collins.
That is so
she
strange. It seems like she knows something if she's disappearing like this. And there was a rumor that she was found at one point, and it turned out not to be her.
Right. The cops have tried a couple of contacts, and neither one of them have panned out. There's also the possibility that Patty Collins might have been murdered as well.
Wow.
And they've never found her body. I don't know. I've spoken to someone who dated Patty Collins during the time she lived with Krista, and she remembers going to Patty Collins' parents' house in a city like Sacramento and playing some of the demos from their recording sessions for her parents, which was an exciting lead because I've never spoken to anyone who actually knew Patty Collins, and the cops have never spoken to this person either.
And what are the theories about Patty Collins and her involvement? Would she be jealous about something regarding Krista, or is she?
Yes.
Is that basically the motive?
I think that's typically it, but there's other factors involved as well. There's when you investigate a case like this, it's difficult when it's 42 years old because you don't know where initial bits of information were gathered. So the cops tell me that there was a rumor that Krista was given drugs by a guy named Rudy Altobello.
Mm.
She was given these drugs to sell because she, I would suppose, because she has all these highfalutin contacts that she could sell to. The rumor was that Krista skimped some of the product herself.
Mm.
So Rudy Altobello, in the wake of Krista's murder, admitted to his girlfriend at the time that he killed her. Then when cops picked him up, he denied it. And the cops believed him because they said Rudy Altobello was a small-time hood who liked to brag about things that he didn't do to make himself look somewhat more sinister. But the cold case cops tried to get in touch with Rudy, but he had died by then. But I think it's probable that Rudy Altobello had something to do with Krista's murder. But if Rudy Altobello did not do it alone, if there were two attackers, then somebody else was with him that night. And his roommate was the keyboardist in those recording sessions, Blair Aronson, the guy that won't talk now about Krista. So obviously he's a person of interest to speak to.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I know this is quite gruesome, but she was both bludgeoned and stabbed, so that would seem, I mean, I'm certainly no expert, that seem to indicate there could be two people, with one having a knife and one having the instrument that she was hit with.
Yeah, and I think the first stab wound, I think her daughter told me the first stab wound was to her back. They think that that was the initial stab wound. But I'm interested in, and I never got a definitive answer to it, was there blood on the driveway that would indicate where she was attacked? Because she ended up on the other side of the house under someone else's car. So how did she end up there? I think that they're keeping the details of the murder secret to a large extent, because if they have somebody that comes forward with credible information, they can give details of that night, and if they get it right, they know that that's a genuine person, because they haven't revealed any of those details yet. Do you
understand? So Blair Aronson was involved in the music world, and was Krista singing, trying to record songs, and exploring a music career also?
Yes. She wanted to be a star. She wanted to try everything that she could to do that. And so disco was all the rage at the time, so she tried her hand at recording an album. Those sessions, I don't know what happened to them. I've tried to track them down and haven't had any luck. But by all accounts, the music wasn't that good. Even the musicians that were playing on it said that they were kind of wincing.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about it, here's an interesting tidbit of information, that Krista, I heard somewhere that Krista was kind of obsessed with the Sharon Tate murder that happened 8 years earlier. And she actually spent time with Polanski. But what's fascinating is the recording session, some of the musicians were related to the director of Helter Skelter, the TV movie Helter Skelter.
Mm.
It was all kind of tied into that somehow. It makes it a lot weirder when you hear some of these connections that happen throughout the case.
Wow. Well, I'm passing this along to a lot of my friends in these circles. My dear friend Josie Pollack introduced Sharon to the film world, or I think got her her first job as an extra in her husband Channing Pollack's film, and Josie was supposed to be there with Sharon Tate when the murder happened, but she had a migraine and didn't go. And I know she's going to know a lot of the people we're talking about. So, and she's was in those Hollywood circles and then became a chaplain in L.A. County Jail. And it's just different people I'm thinking of that I want to make sure they listen to this show. And I think if enough people out here hear this, and I appreciate you not giving up on this. Blair Aronson was a singer and musician in these recording sessions and won't talk now. Do you think he was involved romantically or sexually with Krista?
He was. And here's another wrinkle in the whole thing. Also in that recording session was a backup singer named Debbie Danilo. She's still living. She lives, I believe, in Texas. She's a gospel country singer. But she was a backup singer during this recording session. She had a thing for Blair Aronson as well. And the night before Krista was murdered, she caught Blair Aronson and Krista sleeping together. They were in Blair's apartment that he shared with Broody, and they saw her looking in through the window.
Ooh.
So Debbie Danilo has been interviewed in the past. She refuses to do any more interviews now. But her account of events are much different. She wrote an autobiography, and she wrote a completely different account of what happened that night. But I'm just going by what Blair Aronson told the police back in 77.
And what did he tell them back then?
Just that exact story, that they looked up and she was looking at them through the window. And this was the night before Krista was killed.
So there's potential jealousies here with that triangle and with Patty Collins. So there's the drug possibility, the Rudy Altobello. There's the jealousy because of the promiscuity that's going on. It's very moving that her daughter tried to pick this back up in the mid-2000s because, you know, the story I heard was that Krista's this teenage mother at 17, 18, has her daughter and then, you know, comes out here to Hollywood to make it big, and her daughter's occasionally gets to see her and has that hope that when she's 10 she'll be reunited, but I think unfortunately she was 9 when Krista was murdered. So that's, you know, the love of a child despite it all, you know, that her daughter has tried to find justice. That's quite moving, but I imagine very difficult for the family.
I'm sure it's very difficult, and it's very difficult not knowing, having the sensation that someone is out there that got away with it. But there's also the difficulty of when do I let this go? Because it can really dominate your life and keep you from living fully in the moment.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that she's gone through those feelings. I've talked to her in the past, and she's been so sweet to me and open. But I kind of respect her privacy now. I think she's, if anyone comes out with more information, I'm sure she'd love to hear it. But I get the sense that she kind of wants to put this away somehow. Because it has to be incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, I can see for the just sake of emotional survival. You know,
I feel
we
terrible speaking for her, but because maybe she doesn't feel that way. But I mean, that's the sense I get.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the leads that you think should be pursued that the cops have been apathetic in? Like, what do you think are the, if you were a betting man and said this is the hottest trail that we need to go down, and this is the second one, this is the third one, what do you think are the hottest leads that need to be pursued?
Well, I've given it to them. I gave it to them over a year ago, but and then they dropped the detectives both retired and they haven't reassigned it to anyone. So nothing's happened with that information. But I spoke to someone who has never been spoken to before, who was in those recording sessions. Actually, the person who dated Patty Collins, and he told me about one of the girls. There were lots of groupies that came in and out of Rudy Altobello's house and the recording sessions and Blair's sphere and all that kind of stuff. One of those groupies turned up dead around the same time as Krista. She lived in an apartment building across the street from the Roxy. She was found hanged. It was considered suspicious, but the cops eventually ruled it a suicide. The inner circle in that recording studio believed, and I'll go ahead and say it, believed that Rudy and Blair had something to do with it. And after Krista was murdered, they also believed that Rudy and Blair had something to do with it.
And what
there
would
was
be
also
the motivation?
Another murder.
What do you think would be the motivation for them?
Well, the drugs would be the motivation for Blair Aronson.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, I've got a whole scenario in my mind that might be completely wrong, but I've kind of broken it down for myself in the past few months, a possible scenario. If Krista was skimming some of those drugs, and if those drugs were related in some way to organized crime, the criminal world at that time, I believe that someone, maybe Tony Sirico, who is an actor now, and he was trying to be an actor back then, but he had just served prison time for being related to the, I think the Gambino family in New York City. He's an actor that a lot of people know from The Sopranos. He was trying to break into the entertainment business. He knew all these people in this story. And he still had his fingers in a lot of pies. If somebody like Tony Sirico came to Rudy and said, look, you take care of this because you don't want me to take care of it. I think that Blair and someone else possibly, or I think that Rudy and someone else, possibly Blair, took care of it and killed Krista because she was taking drugs. I believe that they might have taken her purse, not for the diary, but maybe she had some of those drugs in that purse.
Yeah,
and there's another reason
resonate
I believe that.
With
yeah.
the note to her friend Darlene, I'm in way over my head, I'm into something I can't get out of. That fits, for me, just on a visceral level, that fits, you know, skimming some drugs and mobsters fits way in over my head much better to me than I'm having sex with some famous actors and rock stars, you know?
Yeah. Well, and Tony Sirico was a main person of interest because right after Krista's murder, he went to Krista's apartment and he went into her bedroom and took a lot of furs, a lot of jewels. And I think he took some of the audio tapes that were there. I think he went over there looking for the rest of the drugs and didn't find it. But so when investigators tried to question him in 77, he shut them down. He got a lawyer and he didn't talk.
And it's possible he could have taken the diary.
I mean, I guess it's possible, yes, but I heard that she always kept the diary on her, in her purse.
Okay.
So it would have been on her person when she was killed. They never found the diary, but they did retrieve a few of the tapes, including one with George Hamilton and Patty Collins in a three-way.
Wow.
And George Hamilton was questioned. And obviously George Hamilton didn't have anything to do with it, but George Hamilton talked about there being a tension that he sensed in that encounter between Krista and Patty, that there was some kind of jealous tension going on there.
Mm. Wow. Well, there's so many people that I know and that will listen to this that are in these circles that are just popping up in my head right and left. And I think it would be wonderful to, I'm certainly no scientist or cold case expert, but you hear so much now about things being solved from our advances in DNA and you know, all these entities out there that will test DNA samples. And do you know if there's anything available like that, any DNA that could possibly now be traced to an attacker, or do you think they were too smart and didn't leave anything like that?
They took fingernail samples during her murder, but there was no DNA back then. But they did test the blood under the fingernails because she fought hard. So they assume that the blood under the fingernails, or the DNA they found under the fingernails, was from defense, her trying to defend herself. It tested positive for a female, which could mean that she had a female attacker, or it could mean that, you know, she was driving her roommate's car that night. You know, maybe she picked up some female DNA from the car. The DNA is not definitive, and the DNA does not match with anyone that they've tested thus far.
Wow. So that there's a female, but we don't know for sure if there's a female involved in the attack. She could have picked that up another way right before the attack.
Yeah, it could have been incidental. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Wow.
There was also another murder that took place that night, about 5 minutes away. That was similar. Another girl, her name was Sheila Green. She was stabbed to death. I never got any clarity on whether that murder was solved, but it's odd that she was murdered in kind of a similar fashion, so close to Krista. And then there's the Salminio theory.
Right. Yeah. Salminio's murder, I was reading, was on the same date in February, I think a year prior, perhaps, in the same basic West Hollywood area.
It was within a 5-minute range of Krista, and it happened 1 year to the day. Sal Mineo was stabbed once in the heart, and he died, and they caught someone who they thought did it, and he's a free man now, but he's been released from prison. There's always been questions as to whether he actually committed the murder, but I honestly don't think the two are related. I just think it's wild coincidence that that occurred.
Yeah, I mean, it's a year apart, and if they did get the right guy, he's incarcerated when Krista's murder happened. Yeah, that seems.
He was not. He was actually not incarcerated yet.
Oh, he wasn't. Okay. Okay, he was still out there. Okay.
And he was never questioned about Krista as well, because the original investigator wanted to question this guy about Krista, but the I think the defense wouldn't let him because they said that it would impede upon their case or something. But anyway, he was never asked about Krista. And honestly,
wow.
I really don't think it has anything to do with Krista's murder.
The MO
is totally separate. Whoever murdered Krista did it with such a rage that it was a personal killing. Mineo was not.
Yeah, and it seems like this kind of beating is pretty savage. Yeah, and I have similar instincts to you that it seems like it's not as much as a wild coincidence. It just seems like it's not, you know, it's those gut feelings, I think. You know, I was joking around about Columbo at the start of the show, but he used to always talk about listening to his gut on the old Columbo show, and it seems like the answer is here in some of these seedy circles. Well, I'm really grateful you came on the show. I'm going to just take a brief break and see any questions coming in. Listeners, you can send your questions to RichardRossiLive@gmail.com or call the number on your screen, RichardRossiLive@gmail.com. Any questions you have about the case or for Jamie, or call the line there on the screen, 347-637-2379. Jamie, can you hold on, and we'll come back to you in, like, you know, 20 seconds or so after a program identification?
Sure, absolutely.
And we'll wrap this up take a couple questions here. Okay, we'll be right back with Jamie Duvall. Who killed Krista Helm? So grateful to have Jamie Duvall, who has just looked into this so much, done so much research, and I sure hope we can, with all the people I know and Jamie knows and some of my investigator friends out there listening today, that we can shed some light on this. And thank you again to the blogger that's written so much about this case. Stephen, forgive me, what's the last name, Stephen?
Thompson.
Stephen Thompson, a shout out to Stephen Thompson. So we'll be right back with Jamie and a little more on Krista Helm. Who stabbed Krista Helm? Be right back.
Attention! All you radio listeners, I want you to listen. Now, if you're like me, you want a show with spirit, I set your sights on Rich Rossi Live. That's all. At ease.
Oh, this is terrible, terrible, terrible. You understand me? Look, I don't want you to tune into Rich Rossi Live tomorrow, next week, 3 weeks. I want you to tune into Rich Rossi Live now. Oh, yeah!
Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live. We're on with Jamie Duvall, host of Movie Geeks United. All your filmmakers, MovieGeeksUnited.net has interviews with a lot of the greatest filmmakers of all time. So it's a film school to go on to Jamie's site. And can you still hear me, Jamie?
Absolutely, yes.
Oh, great, great. So for those that are interested in Krista's work, we had a Stephanie just sent in a question that she'd like to see some of Krista's work and acting. The movie's not available. Wonder Woman, she's in the first season, Beauty on Parade. What are some of the things that you think are, I know she didn't act that much or that long, but what do you point people to if they want to just get a taste of Krista as a model or actress?
Well, they're slim pickings. Wonder Woman is really the biggest showcase that's available. And as you said, it's the episode called Beauty and Parade. She did an episode of Starsky and Hutch. I don't have the title of that episode on me, but she's only in it for a hot second. She serves them in a drive-thru. But ironically, Sanford Smith, the guy who owned the house that she was murdered in front of, the guy that's now disappeared, he was in two episodes of Starsky and Hutch as well. And the second episode he was in premiered the night that Krista was murdered in front of his house.
Well, which episode premiered the night of the murder, Starsky and Hutch, that Sanford was in?
It's one where a lot of fans love the episode. It's one where I don't know which one's Starsky and which one's Hutch, but one of their girlfriends is murdered or put in the hospital. It's a big episode, but
wow.
That's the one that Sanford Smith is in.
And he disappeared much like Patty Collins. They both went MIA.
Not immediately. Sanford Smith was arrested two years after Krista's murder for cocaine possession, and then he kind of fell off the radar. I don't know if he was incarcerated for it. I don't know what his journey has been, but I think I've found someone who might be Sanford Smith.
Wow.
And I've given that information to Cold Case, but of course they haven't acted on it. Even though they say that they're anxious to speak to him, because he's important. It's important to know whether Krista walked in his house that night or not, because that tells us what her mindset was right before she was killed. If she really knew she was being followed, if she gave any indication of who might have been following her, it's important that someone speaks to him if he's still living.
And was he an agent? Did you say agent?
He says he
earlier?
Was an agent, but he was really a drug dealer. He dealt drugs from that house.
Mm.
And so it's not believable that he was sleeping that night like he said he was, because his house was open all night and people would come in and out to get their stuff. And actually, the guy that found Krista, I believe, was going to the house for that purpose and just happened upon her dying on the sidewalk. And his name was Thurman Brooms. He was a limo driver. And an interesting tidbit of information about him, he is thanked in the credits of Prince's first album. So
wow.
I think he drove around a great number of people as a limo driver. And he was murdered in a drug-related murder a couple of years later, too.
Someone also sent in a question here, Robert. Robert in Lakewood asked about a roommate was mentioned earlier. Did the roommate also disappear, or what happened to them?
The roommate spoke to 48 Hours, even though she wouldn't appear on camera. She
okay.
told them, this was back in the mid-2000s, she told them that after the murder, Tony Sirico went to their apartment, and she said that he rummaged through Krista's things and took things from the apartment. Now, I convinced her to talk to me. She wouldn't talk to anybody, and she wouldn't be recorded, but I made notes of everything she said and wrote it up, and she approved it. And she totally changed her story when she talked to me. She said, no, Tony Sirico didn't come over. He was the nicest guy. He actually moved in with me for a time after Krista's murder, and he was helping out with things around the house. He's a sweetheart. And that kind of gave me the creeps. That kind of led me to believe that after she said that to 48 Hours, Tony Sirico told her, you better shut up. And she did. But she's still around, and I think a lot of people involved in the case think that she knows a lot more than she's telling.
It's astounding because, I mean, this is not like in the middle of the desert, you know. Those of us that live out here, this is, you know, south of Sunset, West Hollywood. There's houses there. There was an actor on Napoleon Dynamite, I heard on one of the clips. Tom Grimes,
yeah.
Was it? He played Uncle Rico. He said he thinks he heard the her screams or the murder. So this was a populated area.
This is kind of how weird the connections in this case are. John Grimes, his father had just died. His father was
a big director, wasn't he?
He was the director of Helter Skelter.
Yes, that's right.
So John Grimes was
in it. I think he had a bit part in it.
Yeah. So John Grimes was staying with his mother right after the father's death. And he heard something that sounded like a cat screaming, like a really blood-curdling scream. He walked outside in the middle of the night, looked down the road, and didn't see anything. Detective said if he would have walked into the street, he would have saw the murders taking place.
Wow.
John Grimes' brother was part of that recording session with Krista. I know more information, but I feel like I've been irresponsible with the information I've actually given you, because I've been naming names that I haven't actually spoken to yet. But I just feel so frustrated that nothing's happening with this case, and that the people that know something aren't talking. And so I kind of feel, in a way, no shame about outing them, because somebody's either alive that had something to do with this, or someone's alive who knows who had something to do with it.
Yeah.
And that's not going to be the case for very much longer, because these people are getting up there in age.
Yes, I mean, this is 42 years. So people that were in their 20s, 30s are now in their 60s, 70s. So please clear your conscience, any of you listening that know anything that could be helpful. Anybody out there listening, because I know people in the circles of, some of the celebrities' names that have come up today that listen to the show, and what would you say to them? I mean, it sounds so trite to say, go to the police, and we love the police, but the police quite often are overworked, as you said, and can drop the ball. So, I mean, somebody that knows something that could be useful, what do you suggest that they do, Jamie?
Well, I mean, they can contact you, or they can contact me. My website on Krista that I'm working on is called WhoKilledKristaHelm.com. And a lot of the information I've discussed tonight is encapsulated on that website. If you go there, there's an email contact form. If you have a tip or a lead, my hope is that someone, I'm just a guy from Lakeland, Florida, who saw this on 48 Hours and wanted to explore it. I don't have any contacts. I reached out to a lot of people, and I started a kind of mini investigation of my own, and I came up with new information in the case. So if I can do it, anybody can do it. If you feel passionate about this case and you want to make a difference in it, if you have possible contacts that you can get in touch with that can further this investigation, then I welcome it, because I don't think this is up to the police to solve. I think it's going to be an amateur sleuth that does it.
Yeah, I feel like you and Steve with the blog, you've done more than many of the people that have the quote-unquote authority to do something about it, and we're really grateful for everything you guys have done, and I sure hope this can be solved. And, as one who recently lost my youngest brother, and there was an investigation, and we have a reward out for information, I know the frustration with law enforcement, but also the feeling of wanting to have those held accountable that have done something. And so this person is out there, unless they've passed. Whatever party or parties were involved in this is still out there. So,
and even if they've passed, I think someone that knows what happened is still alive.
Yes.
I think they're, like you said, there were a lot of people in this inner circle. I think someone knows something.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody knows something. And a lot of times they want to say, I'm deaf and dumb. It's easier not to say anything. It's easier not to get involved. But please do. Those of you listening, please do. WhoKilledKristaHelm.com, and you also, I'm going to put that up on the show because we'll get more replay listens than the actual live listens. So I'm going to add that to the show description, WhoKilledKristaHelm.com, and also you have the Facebook, those of you that use Facebook. Jamie has a Facebook site there, Facebook.com/WhoKilledKristaHelm. And, again, check out his wonderful podcast, Movie Geeks United. Well, thank you, Jamie, for coming on the show. And just any last words you have just in closing to the audience about it all?
No. I think I've said it all, and hopefully I haven't stammered too much. It gets really confusing. There's so many people involved in Krista's story, and sometimes I don't know if I even make sense. But hopefully you got something out of this.
Oh, we sure did. You covered all the cast of characters. I don't think you missed anybody that – and or, you know, I think you've covered it very, very well, and hopefully we will get to enjoy the film that she did, Let's Go for Broke, and she didn't get to do too much work. I mean, she's only 27 when she passed, but hopefully we'll get to see that film one of these days. She certainly is beautiful and charismatic and had a real presence about her.
Yeah, and she deserves justice. Her daughter, her grandchildren now, they deserve justice.
Grandchildren. Wow, if she was alive, she'd be a grandchild. Let's see, I was 14 when she was killed, and she was 27, 13 years older than me. I'm 56, so she'd be about 69 now. Wow.
She was 27 when she was killed. That was 40, yep, 69, yep.
Wow. Well, thanks again, Jamie, and thanks again for your great podcast, Film School, for all of us out there making our indie films to learn from.
Thank you so much, my friend. Thank you for inviting me.
Okay, God bless you, Jamie. Thank you, and thank you to all of you for listening today. And share this link, please, and keep tuning in to Richard Rossi Live. And let me just let you know our upcoming shows. We got a show on a beautiful actress known as the Green Girl, Susan Oliver, to millions of Star Trek fans. She was the Green Girl in the pilot of Star Trek, but she was so prolific. And she's kind of another one of those actresses that many people forget about, but she was on just about every show you could turn on in the 60s and 70s. And we have some information, new information about her life. It's quite fascinating. And so next week, we'll be interviewing next Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, George Pappy, who made a beautiful documentary on Susan Oliver, will be joining us next Wednesday. Thank you for tuning in, and you all be blessed, and thanks for your support of the show. Enjoy the rest of your day.